everyone. My name is Rachel Loloa, Association Manager for the Mechanical Contractors Association, Hamilton, Niagara, and Woman in Mechanical Construction Committee member. Thank you so much for joining us today. If you'd like to join MCA Canada's Woman in Mechanical Construction Initiative, you can sign up on the MCAC website, www.mcac.ca, and don't forget to stay connected with us on social media and with our quarterly newsletters. Hope you enjoy today's podcast. Thanks. I'm very excited to be hosting the Voice Podcast, Episode 1. Getting women into the trades, encouraging, mentoring them, and retaining them is a very important issue. And we have some great speakers today who confirm diversity needs to be a priority in the trades, especially for women of all levels, not just during hiring. So I'm going to start off by introducing our first of our speakers today. It's likely that some of you have heard of this amazing industry leader, Brandy Brandy, I should have asked you how to pronounce that probably before this. She is a 313A refrigeration mechanic, gas fitter one, and social media mogul with her catchphrase, "Good morning, friends." If you are not already following her, you need to do so ASAP. You will not be disappointed by her daily videos as a woman working on the tools and the trades. Through her influence, Brandy has encouraged women to break the bias, become an HVAC instructor and mentor for HVAC apprentices and women in skilled trades, and has been in the industry for over 17 years. Welcome, Brandy. Why don't you start off by introducing yourself and give us a bit of a background on you.
Oh, God, Rachel, I think you already did an amazing job. Thank you. I have been around for a long time. I'm usually described now as one of the veterans. So going on 18 years and counting. I really never expected my life as an HVAC mechanic to turn into what it has. I can definitely say that. But I'm really honored to be here today and to speak on this incredibly important topic. I do work full-time at South Lake Hospital as an in-house HVAC mechanic, part-time at Georgian College as an HVAC instructor, and I work for Support Ontario Youth, mentoring women in skilled trades as well as HVAC apprentices currently. So thank you.
Thanks, Brandy. So happy to have you here today. And our second awesome speaker, she was featured actually in our WMC summer newsletter issue. She was the issue was based on women who are positively impacting the industry. We have a member on the committee, Jason Campbell, connecting us with Ms. Alana Markland. She's the special representative for youth diversity and Indigenous relations for the United Associations of Canada. After receiving her journey person status with Red Steel endorsement and Alberta certified grade B pressure welding certification, Alana started her career at Alberta Pipe Trades College as a welding instructor, where she delivered various welding curriculum to apprenticeship students. Alana, welcome. Same thing to you. If you want to give us a brief introduction about yourself and your role with the UA.
Thank you so much, Rachel. I'm very excited to be here with both of you today. It's so inspiring to be with so many great women in the industry. So thank you. Basically what you said, I started my apprenticeship back in, I believe it's about 2012. I started my Red Seal apprenticeship with UA Local 488 in Edmonton, Alberta, got my Red Seal and was a pipe welder in the fabrication shop for a few years before I went into instructing. I absolutely loved being an instructor, being firsthand with apprentices, being able to show them, you know, a few tricks of the trade and really teaching them the ropes. And it was such a fun and great experience. I absolutely loved my apprenticeship, working on the tools and instructing. And now I'm in the role with the United Association as their special rep for youth diversity and Indigenous relations. And it just gives me a bigger national picture to be able to help even more people discover what an amazing career you can really have in the skilled trades, especially for women.
Well, thank you both again for being here today. I know when we spoke earlier in this week, we're excited for today's topic. It's a hot topic right now, so really excited to dive into it. So for those of you who don't know, our topic today is encouragement, mentorship, and retention of women in the trades. So obviously we have two great ladies here who can definitely speak on that and hopefully give not only the apprentices, those thinking of entering the trade, some advice, but also the contractors who are already in the trade. So Lana, I'm going to start off with you. If you could talk about a little your experience in the trade and how we should be encouraging women to enter the trades as a career, and you know, what can you think can be done better for those contractors who want to encourage women to enter the trades?
Okay, so I think that there's a lot of things that we can do and a lot of things that we're already doing, right? So we know, and for example, like this is a fantastic career for women. It brings a lot of independence, right? It's great paying wages, got health benefits. So it is a fantastic avenue. Regardless of if you think college or university is a good avenue, the skilled trades are just as good, right? It's an earn while you learn apprenticeship. You can earn a wage while you're doing the entire program. And it's a really great option for women. It's a great option for anyone really who's willing and wanting to get into that environment. But there are a few barriers that particularly women do face when trying to access the industry. One of the biggest things that we really are striving towards to be more inclusive to women in the industry is with UA Canada, we're looking at pregnancy benefits as well as maternity and paternity benefits. So that's something that we've really introduced and makes a big difference for women, right? When they're supported throughout their entire, you know, work, health, life, that really shows that they're in an industry that really wants to see them succeed. So having those type of programs are really important. And another one that we really do face is childcare, fully recognizing that childcare is a parent's issue, not just a women's issue, but women are predominantly affected, right? And so I think when we can address the issues of childcare, maternity, paternity, and create that inclusive environment, we're better able to support women coming into the skilled trades.
Awesome. And Brandy, I'll ask you the same question if you have anything to add to that.
Yeah, I know. I think Alana makes some amazing points because obviously those are things that are first and foremost on our minds, especially trying to encourage younger women into the trades. I find when I speak at school events, that's something that the parents will bring up to me about what happens, you know, if and when they decide to have a family, right? I do know we had a young woman that's actually out in Vancouver, Jules. She was working, I was formerly part of UA 787 in Ontario. And that chapter out in Vancouver, she was their first female refrigeration mechanic to get pregnant. So, mm-hmm. you know, there's conversations that have to be had of like, how long is it safe to work around refrigerants? What's mm-hmm. considered light duty? You know, and then again, also having, like Alana was saying, that security of knowing you're not just going to be replaced when you go off on mat leave, right? It's assumed you'll come back. And then when you do come back, what does that look like for you? Like as a woman, you might need to pump. Or what kind of special needs do you have? I know I've seen videos where women are on job sites and they've got the big Yeti cooler with them and they're doing it in their trucks right now, right? We need to refine that process, right? Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of people with a thicker skin like myself that have been up and coming through the trade since the early 2000s, like 2003. But we're trying to make this more accessible and user-friendly for future generations so that they don't have to kind of have that thick skin that we did to get through it. It should just be a career. Mm-hmm. Secondly, as I talk to employers, you know, just something as simple as washroom facilities. If you're working at a place where sometimes, for example, as an in-house mechanic myself, there's a locker room with a shower and change rooms and that. A lot of like people, if you're working at a water sewage plant, I talked to a local yesterday, they're trying to bring women in for recruitment. They don't have the same facilities available for women there. So, I mean, it has to be equal, right? And on top of that, you know, if you come from a certain job like myself where we have to wear uniforms, employers need to start researching, like, do the companies you currently use as your uniform supplier make women's uniforms available? I wear a full FR uniform all day to work. Carhartt makes it, so that's my brand. But there is a lot of other independent companies, as we know. A lot of them have been started by female tradespeople. Just because there is a need for that, right? PPE, like I, my hands are a size 6 or 7. They don't stock those gloves on the shelf, you know, but, you know, proper fitting gloves, high-vis vests, all of those good things, harnesses, you know, they make all of this gear now for us. And it's something that employers need to have the foresight to look at. If you're looking to bring a woman in, you should already have all these answers ready to go. You should have all this stuff ready for them. So their first day on the job is just as comfortable as anyone else's first day on the job.
Thanks for that, ladies. I'm going to do a follow-up question on that because both of you obviously at one point were thinking and probably be encouraged to enter the trades. Mm-hmm. How personally were you encouraged to enter the trades and why did you pick to enter the mechanical contracting field as a woman? Was there anything, obviously there was some obstacles, feel free to talk about that, but what were kind of those pros that kind of outweighed the cons of why you both wanted to enter the trade? And I'll go back to you for that one.
For sure. I reside outside of Edmonton, Alberta, and I have family in the skilled trades. And for me, I could see what type of career they were building for themselves. Like, my father raised us as a skilled tradesperson, with my mom staying at home. We were able to make a good life and still, you know, go on family vacations and with one person working in the skilled trades. And to me, someone working like a Red Seal career, that was something that was sought after. That wasn't a second choice. That was something, it was a career to be proud of. You could provide for your family and really do well for yourself. It was actually also my younger sister who started her career in the skilled trades as well as an automotive technician. I thought, if my younger sister can do it, well, I can do this too. She, you know, and so it was really kind of a bit of a motivator for me to see how well she was doing and how much she was loving her career, to be like, I want that chance. I want to be able to do that. And I always enjoyed working with my hands. Like, I was working, you know, helping out with my dad. We were always camping, going outside and outdoorsy type of people. My grandfather too has had a woodworking shop, and I was always in there with him helping. We were painting, cutting, whatever it may be. And I thought, this is fun. This is what I like to do. This is what I love to do. During high school, you just don't know, right? I took a bit of an intro to careers in the trades in high school, and I thought, okay, this is really fun and I really enjoy this, but I'm not 100% sure, which is how a lot of 15, 16, 17 year olds feel, right? So I went into the workforce, did a lot of administration work, and realized that behind a desk was not for me. And I wanted to get out there. I wanted to do stuff, move around. I wanted to get paid to exercise, you know, I don't have to go to the gym. If I can go to work, this is great. So I did. And it took some time. It was not an easy foot in the door. It took a lot of applying, a lot of applications, a lot of inquiring, and it took me over 2 years to find an employer that was willing to take on somebody who didn't have any experience per se in the skilled trades without that, you know, lived life experience. So I think the more we can make it available for, you know, employers to realize that women really are great candidates, you know, kind of try to get rid of some of that unconscious bias that some, you know, hiring practices may hold, right? Unwillingly, but it's there. And create a little bit more of an open environment and provide just more opportunities, right? Like, women who want to get into the skill trades are there because they want to be there, right? So it's just providing them those doors, those opportunities to get them started. And we know that they're going to prove for themselves why they're there and why they want to be there and why they should be there.
Thanks for that, Atlanta. Brandy, anything you wanted to add to that?
Yeah, like, from my experience, it's very different than Alana's, and I think that's definitely a generational thing. So my first attempt was in 2003 to get into the skilled trades, and it was a second career for me. I did grow up blue collar family. My dad's a master electrician. My grandfather was a carpenter. And much like Alana, I really enjoyed tinkering with my dad on the workbench and whatnot. However, it was never a question. I was going to university and there was no discussion about it. In fact, in those days, earlier times, because 2003 is when I started to get into the trades, I had come out of high school almost 8 years before that. So that would have been the late 90s. And the skilled trades really was at that point a lesser option. We had a school where I grew up in Windsor, Ontario. It was called a vocational school. If you weren't doing well in high school or you were a behavioral issue, they sent you there to learn a trade. And that stigma really was what's carried through. And I still find it there today as I talk to parents at school events when they come in with their kids. So for me, it was a second career, but I did the university route. I got my very expensive diploma and I could not sit at a desk. I learned that at my co-op. So at the early age of my early 20s, I gave my parents their expensive diploma, and I headed out on my own. I still needed to make a living, so I ended up in the hospitality industry for about 13 years. And then my first attempt was in around 2003. So I didn't know what I wanted to do. Like Alana said, it just wasn't right there, but I knew I didn't want to sit at a desk. If I was going to go back to school in my late 20s, I was going to only do it this one time. So I didn't want to go into a career path where I could be replaced by technology. I wanted to make sure this was going to be a career for life. And I wanted something that was going to give me the financial stability and independence to take care of myself. Because up until that point, I would describe myself as fiercely independent. So I did take care of myself. So yeah, I cashed in all my chips. And at the first try at 2003, as Alana said, they say you have no experience, but that's the point of apprenticeship. You don't need experience as a first-year apprentice.
Exactly.
You get paid 40% of a journeyman's wage because you know nothing.
Yeah.
However, aside from some other colorful interview questions such as, are you here to find a husband? I feel you'd be a distraction to my men, and some others that I won't mention. you know, this thing about experience came up and it was so disheartening. Social media wasn't a thing then, so I had no idea there were no other women that did these jobs. I assumed it was 2003. I'm like, there's got to be tons of women that do these jobs. Mm-hmm. So I actually, I packed it in, and it was a few more years before I tried, and I ended up taking a pre-apprentice women in skilled trades carpentry class. And this was kind of, I took a new approach to it, and I needed to be armed with a little bit of background on my resume. So mm-hmm. I started doing that with my skilled trades resume. And that was really where my journey kind of officially began. So I was around 32 then. But I think that first experience in 2003 was so important, because although I was really horrified at the experience I had going out trying to get signed up, it really lit a fire inside of me. And it wasn't just about anymore getting this career. It was kind of like I just couldn't believe this was happening in this day and age to me. I guess I was naive to that fact. I thought, I had no idea really. I thought I traveled back in time to 1950, you know, and it's really disheartening even still today. There is a lot of this that still happens, but, you know, pursuing this path and making the change, we have to stay active and stay out there. It was important to me even getting my ticket. I've shown up over at events for over 15 years now, because like the saying goes, you can't be what you can't see. And I know that every day that I continue to work on the tools and I continue to teach and all of those other things, that visibility of just myself, my person being there, it's a reminder to everyone. You know, my male students go to job sites now, and it's not uncommon if they see a woman on a job site because they had a female instructor, you know. And I think that's part of the important part is the visibility of us all. And social media has definitely helped with some of that. But we have to remember that those old stigmas and that old school behavior is still there, which is why even a podcast like this is going to help make changes in our landscape.
Great. Thanks, Brandy, so much. And that's kind of a good point that'll segue me into my next question. Obviously, you know, looking at the news, there's a shortage in general right now for workers, especially in the skilled trades. You know, people are retiring. People, you know, like yourself, Brandy, looking to switch careers. They might be leaving the skilled trades, unfortunately. So why do you, I'll start with you, Brandy, for this one. So why do you think it's important to put the emphasis on mentoring and the retention of women in this field? I know it's kind of, we'll go back to some of your other points, but if you want to just talk about, you know, how important it is right now to keep those women and mentor them and retain them in this field right now.
Yeah, as far as I'm concerned, in order to retain women in the trades, the mentorship and support is key. There is nothing more important than this. In 2016, I represented 0.4% of my trade was female. That number has not changed in 2023. I got the latest Skilled Trades Ontario figures. We have more apprentices coming in though. However, why would those women stay if they had to survive the type of life that I did? Because sometimes I say any sane woman would have left a decade ago, but I'm just too stubborn to go. So, you know, I think that the mentorship is key. Myself personally, I had one girlfriend before social media that came up with me through the Women in Skilled Trades program, and she's still one of my BFFs today. If it wasn't for her, I wouldn't have survived my apprenticeship, and I probably still would have had some hard days after. You need that person that's in the trenches with you that can relate to your experience. It is amazing to have a family that supports you or other friends, but it really doesn't mean as much to you as someone that they can't relate. They can't relate to that feeling you get in the pit of your stomach, or when those emotions sit in your throat after someone has said something to you and you have to choke it back, right? They can't relate to having to get up the next day and getting dressed and going back to that job site. But a woman that's also in the trenches with you can. She can be in a different trade, but that's where we're going to make the difference. Women like Elena and myself, we're going to make the difference by being there to give those other women that support. I spoke at an event yesterday, and one of the employers brought their 19-year-old female apprentice, and she wants to quit. She's done. And he actually, I give him so much credit, and there are so many good men out there. I'm not definitely not hating, but he said to her, he brought her right up to me. He's like, would you be able to talk to her? And I was like, you are literally going to be my new best friend. Like, here's my cell number. You call me any time of the day. And I'm hoping to meet with her next week to have coffee. But we make the difference because we need to not only lift each other up, but we need to make sure that we dust each other off so that we can keep going and remind them why they're there, the big picture. When I have young women calling me crying in a washroom, I remind them that those people don't know them personally. They don't know what they're made of, and they can't take those comments or those actions personally either. Mm-hmm. I remind them of what they've invested in their time and their effort into that to get this red seal. And tomorrow is a new day, right? So think of the long-term goal. You want to get licensed one step at a time, right? Don't let one bad day on a job or one, you know, terrible person's attitude ruin everything that you're trying to work for. And that's where we need to rise above and really be there for each other as a community, as a sisterhood, really.
Thanks so much, Brandy. Elena, anything you wanted to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, mentorship is one of the biggest pieces and sometimes the most difficult, right? Sometimes we're the only woman on the job site or we don't know a lot of women. Like you said, Brandy, if you don't know a lot of women, who do you go to, right? And I think the thing with mentorship too, with being in the skilled trades, is you don't realize you need that mentorship, that closeness, that circle until you need that circle. And I didn't have a lot of people that I worked with, especially women in the shop that I was in. We had the odd person, but not a lot. And we started our Build Together Women of the Building Trades committee, and it was women from all different trade unions across Alberta. And I'm some of the best friends with those women now because you can share experiences like you know, it's somebody who's, like you said, Brandy, in a different trade, it's still the same issues that we face, right? And we do hear it a lot. And I think we really need to try and break the stigma too of tradeswomen groups, right? Is it special treatment? Why do they get a group and we don't get a group? And just to clear that, it's not a special group to give any woman any special treatment. It's just that we're so far and few between that we don't have these ideas to bounce off each other on a daily basis. And that's why women's committees, women's groups, get-togethers, lean-in circles, whatever it may be, to give women that outlet to have that peer support, right? I know that there's many women, I just had a phone call the other day too, crying on the other line because I come into a situation, I don't know how to deal with this, I don't know what to do about it. And just having an ear to hear someone who's been through the same situation or knows, you know, a few different ways and pieces of advice to help a person through that situation, that is huge for somebody. That is life-changing for somebody sometimes, right? When they have that backup, that support behind them to help them really through the career. And trust me, we've had tears, we've had great laughs, and you know what? We've made some great friendships and really trying to just lift each other up and support each other, not necessarily to try and get ahead or get that special treatment, by no means. It's a support for people who need it. And sometimes we don't even realize how important it is until we're in a situation or you see either you can help somebody or somebody helped you and it made all that difference for you, right? And two, even with that support, that's not to say our male allies aren't as supportive as well, because let me tell you, I've had a few where I've had to go run into, you know, the journey person on site who happens to be the male. I'm like, you'll never guess what happened and I need your help, right? So that mentorship stems even farther than just women. But it is nice to have somebody who's, you know, hey, and you know, I need that thing for the bathroom. Can I, you know, go in your locker, please? You know, and just to have even just support like that is, it's imperative. It is imperative to making sure that we can retain the women that we have in the trades.
I'm so glad you touched on Atlanta, because I didn't want people to think this podcast, you know, women, it's just for women. But yeah, it's also about that ally. It's also about, you know, those who identify as male in the industry and how they can be an ally and support and, you know, developing that in the trade. So thank you so much for hitting on that. And to kind of go back a bit to my next point, obviously, I believe both of you, you know, had family in the trades or knew people in the trades. In my position as an association manager, I get calls or asked all the time how to get into the trades. Like if people aren't exposed to it, you know, I think you mentioned about school, it's usually a lot of times going to university, you know, people don't know about the trades until later in life or aren't exposed to it. Lynn, I'll start with you. Like how can someone get into the trades? And maybe if you want to touch on, especially being in the union, how, you know, suggestions on how they can grow in them and the opportunities that are in the trades and growing in the trades for a woman.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's so many, and I like Brandy, how you mentioned the pre-trades program. I think those are a fantastic way to get your foot in the door, get some experience, right? But it's also imperative that some of those programs make sure that you can actually be placed into an apprenticeship program, right? So making sure that there's supports after that, right? To ensure that you get employment and start that apprenticeship program. So I think that that's really great. It starts in high school too, right? And it comes down to speaking with not only students, but parents. Like Brandy, like you said, your parents wanted you to go to university. And that's a common theme. And there's nothing wrong with university or college, right? But we just need to make sure the students know that trades are just as good, right? The careers are good paying. You can earn while you learn. So I think it's just bringing awareness to schools, to young people. I mean, I was quite young when I realized that, hey, I want to be in the trades. I just never pursued it because I didn't know all of the options, right? I have two kids of my own. My son is 6. He's determined he's going to be a plumber. My daughter is 3, who's determined she's going to be a welder. So you can never start too early, right? You got to get them realizing that these careers are really, truly great ones that have a lot of opportunity. So I think that's important. And really, I think the outreach, the social media, as it can be fantastic, but it can be dangerous too. So just, you know, keeping our caution. But if that's how we want to speak to youth today, that's how we're going to have to do it, right? So getting out there that these are great careers. And like you said, Brandy's so great on social media. And when you're sharing those positive stories, those exciting things, it really helps to inspire young women to get into the trades because they can see somebody else doing that. Say, hey, that's cool. I'm going to be able to do that. Or, and I think that's a big piece, right? Like getting to talk to people that are youth. I know we target grade 10, 11, 12. Because they're starting to look at careers, but there's nothing wrong with looking at grade 5, 6, 7 and getting them interested, right? So
awesome. Brandy, anything you wanted to add to that of, you know, getting women into how they get started?
Yeah, I definitely will add to that. It's a good thing Elena brought this up with the age group. Actually, a big thing that Conestoga does, and they're going probably national and even across our borders with this, is their Jill of All Trade programs. Mm-hmm. So the school boards sign up and we actually put the tools in the young ladies' hands, and this will target us ladies in grades 7 and 8, as well as 9 and 10. So that's one way that you can actually have a chance to, we do a soldering project with them. Sometimes they do sheet metal. They're actually mm-hmm. driving like backhoes and diggers, and they're rigging with gantries and chain falls. It's amazing. So events like that the school boards put on are fantastic. We did mm-hmm. one at Georgian as well. We had a day for women where we also did a hands-on day with them. Every different program had a hands-on activity. We actually made little tabletop iPhone holders with them out of copper pipe. So they all actually used torches and everything. And I mean, once you get the tools in their hands, really just their minds do the rest of the work. Mm-hmm. And when I think it's important, again, at the school board level, the problem I think at a lot of those, I've been to a lot of events the past few weeks at night. I'll work all day at the hospital, and then I show up at events for Support Ontario Youth. The universities and colleges are there in full force, and the trades tables are a hard sell. So it is important to show up. It's important that if you are going to be out there with your kids, you know what? Listen to what everyone has to say. I say there's 3 equal options after high school: university, college, or the apprenticeship pathway. The wonderful thing about Support Ontario Youth that I work with, and it's not just for youth, that's their not-for-profit, but we are a way into an apprenticeship pathway. So mm-hmm. with your high school diploma, they end up getting 500 hours towards their first year of whatever apprenticeship they want to get into. And there is such a high demand right now. There is literally no options getting jobs. At Georgian, I have employers reaching out to me about my Gaspiter 3 students like right now. They don't write until January. I have employers that want these guys now. They were calling at graduation, which happens in August. Now they're starting semesters early just to get their hands on our brightest and best students. So looking and doing some research on organizations like Support Ontario Youth, it's a way to get in, to go into an apprenticeship pathway. And there are employers now specifically, I'm even going to name drop the HVAC doctor because they were so amazing. We did an event as Support Ontario Youth for young women, and we brought a whole bunch of women in with employers. A company like him, he's actually actively recruiting women because he wants to diversify his workforce. He doesn't want one token female. He's actively looking to diversify his workforce. He sees the value in having people that identify of all different genders, all different races. He's just looking for human talent. And I really think that's where it's at. We need to remove the gender from the job. But going forward, looking at places like Support Ontario Youth, looking at organizations like Jill of All Trades, all of those things are geared to get young women, their minds thinking about what's ahead, but we're still lacking. Like at the event, again, I just talked to you yesterday, there were some people there from a school board. They'd never even heard of any of these events, and they're looking for something to bring to their students. So there's a part right there, like how do we get the word out for people to start connecting and making these alliances with other organizations that are gonna, you know, get us all to the finish line.
Yeah. Thanks so much, ladies. And yeah, hopefully, one of the point of this committee is just get the word out there. So, teachers, school boards, if you're listening right now, contact Women in Mechanical Construction, contact MCA Canada, there's people out there to expose these young kids, young youth, or different generations to the trades right now. So thank you both for, showing those opportunities. And then I'm just going to wrap up with our last question here. And it's just kind of, where do we go from here? So, I'm going to start off with, we talked a lot about women wanting to enter the trades, and I'll go back to that for my follow-up question. But I know you both had spoke about, women calling, crying, or just people crying and, maybe burnt out from the job. What would you say to these women who are in the trades right now, who, are thinking about leaving it? And like, how can we encourage them to stay right now? And any word of advice for the ones who are already in the trades? Elaine, I'll start with you for that one.
Yeah, one of the pieces of advice, and it depends, and it's very case by case scenario based, right? Like sometimes it's, someone's just having an off day or whatnot. But if it's an issue with another person, there's always, especially in the union environment, we always have shop stewards, job stewards, business agents, managers, like the union, to help back you. So that's always a number one thing, is you always have support. If this person can't support you, go to the next, find that support system, because you do have it. It is available. But when we're talking on a personal basis, like how to actually deal with the situation yourself, I do like to tell people, it's a one third, one third, one third. One third of people are going to like you, one third of the people don't, and another third of the people just don't care. And you know what? So I think being in the skilled trades, I was always a person that was really worried about, what are they going to think? What are they going to think if I do this or that? And always on my mind. And the skilled trades honestly really helped me not really care as much. And so I realized I always go into a situation, as long as I'm doing what I believe is the right thing to do and the right way to do it, I can stand by my choices, and it doesn't matter what anybody else says, because I know I'm doing the right thing for the right reasons. And so when things like that happen, he said it, I did this way, or, back and forth, I'm like, the one third rule, don't worry about it. And honestly, if somebody does react negatively to you because of something you did, even though you know it was the right thing, well, maybe that's a reflection on their character and not yours, right? So try not to take those things to heart. And it's hard, right? Especially when you're a kind of person who's really empathetic and really cares about other people, makes you want to do the right thing. It's a difficult thing to do. And I'm not saying we necessarily need to, get tough skin, because when we're talking issues of harassment or discrimination, sexual harassment, whatever it may be, that just should not be tolerated, right? And I believe that is an environment that we are building. We are currently moving forward. More and more people are active bystanders, saying something against, when they see these things and these issues go wrong. And I think what happens is a lot of people, I would say a huge vast majority of the people on our job sites, don't approve of that behavior. They just might not know how to deal with it, right? And so they just don't say anything, which helps contribute to the problem, but might not know the right way to do it. So I think as we move forward to really address these sorts of things, I think it's an entire culture change. And it's not just a skilled trades culture change, it's a societal culture change, right? So it's not something that's going to happen overnight. But I think we really need to, along with the women in the trades, just as well with the men in the trades, or whatever gender you may identify with, it doesn't matter. If you see issues of harassment or discrimination, be that person to stand up against it. And I think that's a culture that we're actively trying to build. I think it's working. I do believe that it is. And well, it's always up and down. But I think that's one of the biggest pieces, I would say, is trying to change that culture and making sure that you find the support that you need and know that you have it. You just might have to, sometimes you just need to look a little bit for it. So.
Brandy, I see the wheels turning. I know this is a question you get asked a lot. What do you want to add to that? To, keeping those women who may be burnt out or thinking of leaving the trade,
how do we keep them? I identify with that. It's hard to believe from where I sit now, but 5 years ago, I almost quit. Mm-hmm. I almost left. I packed it in, and I was like, right there on the cusp. And I still personally, I'm not quite sure how I made my comeback. But the biggest rule, and kind of Elena touched on it, I went back to my mantra, do not take it personally. However, it is way easier said than done. And mm-hmm. I think a lot of the problems is back to the fact of, a lot of times we don't know we need support until it's too late. Microaggressions and harassment, it's cumulative. It doesn't just like, it's not like water off a duck's back, although we try. And for me, I had to take a really hard look about 5 years ago and realize what had happened to me. Like, my mental health suffered. I put on a lot of weight. I was drinking a lot, and I realized, I woke up one day and I realized I was miserable. I hated going to work. Just the sight of my work van in the morning, I would start to burst out into tears, and I'd never had that reaction before. So I think as a society, regardless of the industry you're in, but we're focused on skilled trades, you know, mental health is also coming out into the open. We're coming out of the darkness. But for women that are currently working, if you think that you're in a bad place, if you've been in this industry for, you know, I'd say more than a few years, the apprenticeship is really the honeymoon phase. There's kind of this little term, it's called from pet to threat. My life got a lot worse after I was a licensed journey person, which to me was an entire shock. You think it's going to get better, and sometimes it doesn't. My mistake was not thinking I had a choice to go anywhere else. They had got to the point where I just felt lucky to have a job. I didn't feel like I was even skilled enough to go to another company. One of my apprentices I had on a panel, actually it was for another event. The most incredible advice this young woman, as someone said, and I'm totally going to steal it from Laura, but I'll give her credit for it. It blows my mind. This is progress here, ladies. She said, they give me 3 months, I give them 6. If I'm not happy after 6 months, I'm leaving. And these days, ladies, for those of you that are out there on the tools, and maybe you don't think you're being treated by up to your worth, go somewhere else. There are so many employers that want you. They're going to appreciate you. You are not going to have someone's boot on your throat. So at this day and age, I would say reach out, find some support. If it is strictly maybe a cultural thing that's happening from management down, you, that person alone, are not going to change that. It's better for you to remove yourself from that toxic environment and find a company where you're happy. I have young ladies that are interviewing now, and that's what they're looking for. It's not about the money. We all know the money's there now. You're going to get the money wherever you go. Find a place where you're happy. Find a place that wants to train you, you know, that is going to put you in a position to succeed, not constantly have someone that's got their boot on your throat is the best expression for it. And for employers, if you're looking to make that a better environment, you yourself should have support resources available to anyone in your company, but geared to kind of what they're struggling with. If you have only a couple women on staff that are working in the field, why not have people's names on hand? For example, I would say to anybody, call me. I don't care. I want nothing back in return. I'll answer the phone for anyone at any time, because that's where I'm at now, right? But yeah, you can't take it personally. Realize the signs that your mental health might be struggling early on. Don't wait until you've been beaten down to the point where you can't come back, and possibly start looking for other employers, because there's no need to sit and suffer in silence anymore. We've moved forward from 2003, yeah. Ladies. It's 2023. Yeah. So yeah. Take care of each other.
Awesome. Thank you. And just my last question, you know, I know we talked about some great topics, and, you know, the one thing, you know, we want to hit on is obviously people entering this workforce, women. If someone's listening to this podcast right now, who's thinking about entering the trades, just short and simple, one piece of advice you want to give to them of why they should enter the trades. And I'll let you think about that for a second. I know it's kind of a different question, but I know you both had been there. There's obviously, you know, kind of were different thoughts. But if you had to pick one, Brandy, what would be that one piece of advice you could give to that any woman of any age, you know, who's thinking of entering the trades, why they should do it?
Yeah, if you're thinking about it, you're already there. Just do it. If you have even thought about it once, that means you're that person. You belong in this environment. So just do it. Either reach out to myself, organizations like Support Ontario Youth, look for a pre-apprentice program in your area. You belong with us. You're that special person, because even if you've thought about it once, like I said, that means that you belong here and you should just go for it. You know what? Just dive in. It's a great time to be enter the skilled trades. You are in the driver's seat. The employers need you more than you need them. So. Yeah. Get out here with us.
Thanks, Randy. And Alana, same question to you. What's the one piece of advice?
I'd almost say the same thing. I go to an event and they're like, you know, I'm thinking about it. Just do it. I'm just waiting on it. Just do it. It's so much fun. It is. It's exciting, right? You get to be creative. That independence that you get just from knowing one trade, the skills cross over, right? Like I could do my own home renovations. Like this is incredible. It gives you just so much pride in your work to be able to do that. And you make great wage, you get health, pension, benefits, all the fun stuff that comes along with it. But it's just fun. Like it's just such a great exciting career. It keeps you moving. It keeps you thinking. And it's something you can truly be proud of. And I think that's really, I love how you put that. If you're already thinking about it, Brandy, like if you're already thinking about it, you're well on your way. And you know what? That's all you need. So what if you don't know how to read a tape measure? So what if you don't, you know, you don't know how to use a grinder? Guess what? That's what the apprenticeship program is for. If you're thinking that it's something that you'd like to do, you can do it, right? You're going to teach that. You're going to learn all that in your apprenticeship program. And yeah, it's just like a, it's a wave your hands, just do it. It's so, it's amazing, right? Like I can't say enough good things about, you know, I'm so glad I pushed for so long to try and get in because it was the best career decision I have ever made in my entire life. The opportunities that come along with a career in the skilled trades is so vast that you couldn't even list them, right? Like just from my own experience becoming a welder, then I became, you know, I worked with pipe fitters, so I got to learn part of that trade. I became an instructor and now I work for our union, right? Like that's just one small path where you can become an, you know, instructor, an inspector. You can work for supervision, project engineering, you know, project planning, management. The list is so vast, right? Like that, that ticket, that foot in the, it's just your foot in the door to an industry that is so huge with so many opportunities. And I think that's one of the biggest things is, you know what, if you're given that opportunity to start in the skilled trades, maybe you get to start as an electrician, but you really wanted to be a carpenter, start as an electrician because it just gets your foot in the door to learn those skills to set you up for success. So I think that's the biggest thing is not realizing once you open that door, it's such a big world, right?
Awesome. Yeah. Thanks, ladies. So as mentioned at the beginning of this episode, this is our first episode, The Woman in Mechanical Construction, The Voice. Obviously, there's a few thank yous I want to do. So I'm going to start off by thanking the awesome Miss Jessica Shaver, who was the behind the scenes woman in this. Thank you to Jessica. She's a staff liaison. She's the membership engagement coordinator for Mechanical Contracting Association of Canada. So thank you to Miss Jessica. And of course, Alana, Brandy, thank you for not only being on this podcast, thank you for allowing us to feature you in our newsletter, you know, be a resource for us in speaking today. The word, I hope this word gets out to those thinking of entering the trade, especially. You're both such a encouragement to myself, you know, so being new to this industry, it's great to have people like you to talk to and look up to. So thank you both for being on the podcast today.
Thank you so much.
All right. Well, that's it for our first episode.